May it please the court, I'm Julie Frank. I am the attorney for the appellant Heather R. This case raises issues at the intersection of two competing standards in Nebraska law for making child custody determinations. And that is the intersection of the parental preference doctrine and the best interest standard. This petition for further review basically deals with the denial of certain fundamental rights to my client, Heather R., with regard to the guardianship of her daughter, K.R. And those issues, really, there are four of them, but they all arise out of the Due Process Clause of the 14th Amendment of the United States Constitution. That, first of all, not allowing Heather to have the guardianship terminated over her daughter deprives her of her right to custody without clear and convincing evidence of either parental unfitness or parental forfeiture. In affirming the decision of the county court, the Nebraska Court of Appeals violated appellant's due process rights and expanded an unwarranted exception to the parental preference doctrine. The Nebraska Court of Appeal also violated Heather's due process rights in failing to require the trial court to provide a pathway to reunification between Heather and her daughter to include but not limited to visitation or other methods of reunification that would allow them to be reunited. And finally, the Nebraska Court of Appeals violated the appellant's due process rights in finding that the trial court had not improperly delegated authority about issues of visitation, family therapy, and guardianship termination, where the trial court indicated that it would entertain modifying those issues, quote, if and when it is recommended by the child's therapist.
The United States. Let me ask you to expand on what do you think that the Court of Appeals did wrong as a matter of law?
Well,
when you say expanded.
Well, what happened, I think, was that we had a case. Neither the trial court nor the Nebraska Court of Appeals found parental unfitness of the part of my client. And the reason that is important is that the United States Supreme Court, in a litany of cases, has recognized the elevated, constitutionally protected relationship between parents and their children and protecting family integrity. Those cases go back to Troxell versus Granville, Quillian versus Walcott, Santosky versus Kramer. I think I've cited at least eight or nine.
In the Walcott line of cases, there's comment frequently quoted about not letting best interests, as in who can provide the most lavish lifestyle
Correct.
For the
Correct.
Child, to,
right,
to control things. But in the end, the ruling was based on best interest, was it not?
That's correct, Judge, and that's my point.
And maybe that just illustrates the tension.
Correct.
So if your proposition is best interest is an expansion, is that your legal proposition?
I think what my proposition is that allowing best interest as separate and apart from parental unfitness is erroneous.
And but you're proceeding under 5-212, right, in the statutes? Is that right? Removal of a guardian.
Correct.
Okay.
Well, yes.
Right. So that's the statutory framework.
That is the statutory
for this process, and that language in there includes removal would be in the best interest.
And that is
so whether or not the Court of Appeals was relying on Wyndham, which may or may not have gone overboard with best interest,
right.
Nevertheless, you're working under a statute that refers to best interest.
Well, that refers to best interest. However, yeah. In reviewing the United States Supreme Court cases, what we've done in Nebraska is kind of flipped around the best interest standards. In the parental preference doctrine and in all the cases stemming from the United States Supreme Court, you may not interfere with parental preference or, which is what we call it in Nebraska, but into the protected parent-child relationship unless there is Well, what the Supreme Court says is that there is a rebuttable presumption that best interest is served by the reunification of the parent and the child. And that can only be rebutted if there is parental unfitness. So the U.S. Supreme Court
or
has...
Or abandonment. Because we talked about Quillian, and didn't Quillian find that the preference was overcome by best interest?
No, I don't believe Quillian. That's not my recollection on Quillian. In Quillian, Quillian was the grandparents' visit. No, Quillian was, I got to remember which one Quillian was. I had
I think Justice Pavlik and I are calling the same case different names. Maybe Walcott is that part of it.
Quillian was an unwed father.
That's a father. Okay, thank
you. It was an unwed father, and that he was not, there was a presumption because he was an unfit, he was an unwed father, that he was not given due process rights in the adoption of his child. And at that point, the United States Supreme Court recognized the superior parental right with regard to the parent-child relationship. In his case, I can't remember exactly the facts of that case. I believe that might be a case where there was very little or no involvement of him as a father prior to the adoption, and that because of that, there was unfitness. It wasn't...
Well, isn't there an implied finding of unfitness by the Court of Appeals?
No, Judge. I think there's no implied finding of parental unfitness by the Court of Appeals. The Court of Appeals basically says we find no parental unfitness, but we're going to revert to this best interest standard that was raised in Walcott. In doing that, they have flipped around what the Supreme Court says. The U.S. Supreme Court has said that there is a rebuttable presumption that it is in the best interest for reunification, and the only way that can be shown is by parental unfitness. And if you'll recall, Santosky versus Kramer requires that to be by clear and convincing evidence. In this case, Heather you can read the facts. I mean, it's set forth in my brief, and I could probably spend my entire time going over what the facts are. But the long and the short of it is that although Heather was convicted of felony child abuse, she had subsequent to when the abuse occurred, she underwent two parenting assessments, two psychological evaluations with parenting assessments, two chemical dependency evaluations, two parenting classes. She underwent therapy, successful completion of therapy, and the second parenting assessment and psychological...
Well, given those facts, can a court, Court of Appeals, or this court, or the original trial court, say, I still do not think that there's fitness here?
The line of cases out of this court is that it has to be present unfitness. It can't be... It has to be the present ability of the parent, of the parent in their ability to be fit parents.
Did the county court make an implied finding of unfitness?
No, Judge, not really.
I mean, didn't they recite the parental preference doctrine and say it governs, and didn't they say there has to be a showing of unfitness?
I don't believe they ever said there has to be a showing of unfitness, but they did, you're correct. They did cite the parental preference doctrine saying that was the standard. But never did I see in there a requirement of parental unfitness. And then, basically, there's nothing done after that. My client has not had contact with her child for 4 years. There was nothing done with regard to protecting her parental rights, with regard to any type of steps towards reunification. And I think those U.S. Supreme Court cases are very, very clear that the step is best interest is presumed unless there is showing a parental unfitness, so that before you can interfere with the parental rights, or in this case, continue with the interference of parental rights, which we're not contesting was necessarily wrongly decided to begin with, but once my client was able to show that she is fit, there's no reason they showed that she was unfit. The only reason they said she was unfit was, I think, because she doesn't get along with her parents. I mean, that's essentially, if you read through the opinion, that's what happens. And that glosses over all of the evidence in the record that shows that that her parents were unwilling to work with her, cooperate with her, even have contact with her regard to setting up supervised visitation, therapeutic visitation, anything. And so and the burden is on the party who is opposing the termination of the guardianship to prove unfitness. Their experts couldn't tell whether my client could parent. That was a therapist of the child. The mother, the grandmother, who is the, one of the guardians, couldn't, had no idea my client's ability to parent. There is simply a failure of evidence with regard to fitness, unfitness, and because of that, our laws in Nebraska require that the burden be met by the person opposing the termination of the guardianship. There was no evidence presented by them. The evidence which my client presented was an expert who had done two evaluations, shown improvement in parenting ability and an understanding of the principles of parenting, and a improvement in her ability to make good decisions based upon self-esteem. There was nothing but glowing evidence with regard to my client's ability to parent, given that she hasn't been allowed to have contact with her child in now 4 years. So
back to my initial question, and I may have been referring to the uniform code, but we're proceeding under 32616.
Yeah, we're under the probate code.
Right. Okay. All right. Thank you.
And the cases that are cited under the probate code require a showing of parental unfitness by clear and convincing evidence.
Thank you very much. Mr. Campagna, good morning to you.
May it please the court, Patrick Campagna on behalf of the Appalese. I would suggest to this court that there is no expansion. The burden was on my clients to prove unfitness, and we did that. Unfortunately, we were able to do that beyond any shadow of a doubt, but the burden was clear and convincing. What I would like to point out is that there are at least 9 examples in the record where the mother is unfit, was determined to be unfit, in combination of her testimony and the testimony of the child's therapist. My clients don't observe mom parenting anymore. They are not able to say what she can and can't do. What's significant is that 13 weeks after her sentencing of a felony 3A child abuse conviction, she filed yet this motion to terminate the guardianship. This was, I think, the third attempt to dismiss the proceedings. This came on the heels of a conviction and said, you have 18 months to serve this probation and fulfill these obligations. When we proceeded to trial just a couple months later in May of 2017, the mother had not yet acknowledged the scope of the abuse. She persists throughout the trial testimony to suggest that the abuse occurred in a 2-week span, whereas the criminal conviction indicates a 2-year span of abuse. Very significant. She is unfit, I would suggest to you, because she will not disclose, she will not accept, she will not acknowledge, and she will not get any treatment for what led her to allow this abuse to occur.
Did the county court find that she was unfit?
That's a very good question. I think it's implied by virtue of the county court's decision and the Court of Appeals decision. I've looked for appellant's contention that there was a determination of fitness, and I don't see that either at the trial court level or at the Court of Appeals level. There is a recitation of what it is, what obligations we had, and that the parental preference doctrine is there. It's very clear that at the time of the trial, Your Honor, she had not accepted the scope of what had occurred. Begs the question, how could she be fit to deal with the child's victimization during the abuse and the re-victimization that was occurring by virtue of forcing her to testify?
So your position is that the county court made an implied finding that she was unfit.
Yes.
But then we also have the Court of Appeals opinion, which seems to say we don't have to look at whether there was a finding of fitness because this is a case where best interest can trump the parental preference principle. What's your reaction to the Court of Appeals opinion? Is that a proper reading of the parental preference principle?
It's above my pay grade to suggest how it was worded. My thought is that the Court of Appeals was saying that the parental preference doctrine was overcome by virtue of mother's unfitness not being able to address the best interests of this particular child. If she doesn't acknowledge the scope of the abuse, if she doesn't acknowledge the scope of the torture, of the sexual abuse, if she puts it all on what occurred to her daughter with respect to two young boys that she allowed to live in her home. That doesn't speak to the other abuse that occurred over the other two-year span. She continues to blame the guardians and then the trial court, victimizing herself. This whole situation, the trial proceedings, the appellate proceedings, this is all about her. We are being unfair to her. Her parents are being unfair to her. It's not about what the child needs, what the child suffered, and what therapy the child needs to address those challenges that will face her the rest of her life.
Is it too simple to say parental preference can be overcome?
No, it's not too simple, and we did it. We did it, Your Honor.
Can it be overcome without a showing of unfitness or forfeiture of parental rights?
I don't think so, Judge. That's my personal opinion. I don't think so.
But it's your view that it doesn't matter in this case in any event because you proved unfitness.
We did. Well, if there is an expansion of the standard, we would meet it either way. Mom continues to show no remorse other than the transcript reflects she had remorse for not... She felt badly for what those two boys did. But she had no remorse for forcing her daughter to take the stand at that young age for over an hour and a half in her criminal court proceeding to testify against her. She showed no appreciation for the fact that her parents came forward and thankfully established a guardianship. She showed no remorse for the...
What is our standard of review here? Are we OVO standard of review, or are we looking at some discretion down below, or what are we?
My understanding, Judge, is this is a de novo standard of review.
Are we within the probate code?
That's correct, Judge.
So we're looking at all these facts yet again. This court is.
That's my understanding, Your Honor. It's important to know.
So one of the things we have to look at is how soon is the unfitness to present moment, I guess. I think what you're trying to tell us is the unfitness is continuing.
The unfitness was continuing at the time of the trial on the motion to terminate the guardianship. The facts before the trial court were very clear that the mother had not done anything to remedy the situation that allowed her daughter to be abused.
The abuse actually took place 4 years ago or some time ago.
The criminal conviction on the criminal complaint indicated that the abuse occurred between May of 13 and May of 15. And mother had done nothing to remedy what allowed that abuse to occur. Counsel suggested at the trial court level, at the appellate court level, that mom's psychological evaluation somehow remedied the situation. Just because she has no psychopathology or personality disorder doesn't suggest that she didn't allow for the child abuse to occur. That she's working, that she's gainfully employed, that she has a home, that she's married.
What about the fact she's apparently raising one or more other children right now? Is that correct?
That would presume facts that were not part of this trial court ruling. I'm aware
that's not in evidence.
I don't believe that that's in evidence, Your Honor. I'm aware of additional custody proceedings with respect to that child, but that's not part of what is before you. The fact that the mother attended a parenting course or an online parenting education course for 12 hours, none of those things abrogated the fact that the abuse occurred. I wouldn't if she took 22 parenting courses, would that change the fact that the abuse occurred? How could she have addressed the underlying issues in her own life that allowed that abuse to have occurred if she doesn't acknowledge the entire scope of the occurrence? The fact that
it sounds like it's your position that because she had that conviction for felony child abuse, she can never be fit. Is that what you're asking us to define?
No, no, Judge.
You're spending a lot of time talking about what she can't do to overcome it.
I'm doing that because at the time of this trial, she hadn't done any of these things. She had gone to therapy and completed it before she was even sentenced in the criminal case. The therapist didn't even know anything about the criminal conviction or the sentence or the abuse. They weren't tied together. The evidence in the record says that that therapist was not provided any collateral information about this occurrence. So she wasn't working on those issues. To answer your question specifically, in my view, she has to acknowledge what happened, accept her role in the entire scope of this torture sexual abuse case, get therapy to address those issues, those underlying issues, and then make real life changes and express not just the remorse that criminals convicts can express, but express that to her daughter through the therapist and address those issues in that context. There's no indication she did any of those things. She was suggesting because she met the standard of compliance with therapy from a probationary perspective that that was sufficient. May I be excused?
Thank you. You may. Do we have any time for rebuttal? There is no time for rebuttal. We will go on then to the next case of the day, which is State versus Munoz.